Perek Hey, Mishnah Zayin. Mishi Zimun Itzla Orchen. Let's say, continuing on with the halachot of Tchumen, let's say one invites guests to one's house on Yom Tov. Lo yulichu biyada manot, that they may not take home with them manot, portions of food from the Baal. In other words, to take possession of the food on Yom Tov and bring it back home to their own house, in their own tchum, but might not be in the tchum of the owner of the house. Elam kein zachal lahem manotam erev Yom Tov, unless that the owner, the host, essentially gives them possession of this food from erev Yom Tov. And if that's the case, then they follow the tchumim of the guests and not the tchumim of the host. Now, with finishing the Masechet Abeitza, so we go back now to the halachot of Muksa, which are dealt with extensively within the context of the Masechta. Ein mashkin eshochen tin et midbarot. We know that you're allowed to shecht animals on Yom Tov because of heter ocho nefesh. But here we have a question of, let's say you have animals that aren't completely accessible to you. In other words, there are many animals that graze for long periods of time. So grazing, arranging animals, you can't water them to loosen their hide and shocht and shech them on Yom Tov because they're not considered muchan for the purposes of Yom Tov. Aval mashkin v'shochet tenet abaitot. But you can go ahead and water and shecht domesticated animals. So what is the difference between a domesticated animal and a range animal for this purpose? Elohin abaitot, halanot bipir. Let's say you have animals that graze during the day, but at night they come back within the confines of the ear. Those are considered domesticated animals. And bariot, and those that are essentially wilderness animals or grazing range animals, halanot ba'afar. These are the ones that spend the night out in the fields, meaning they don't come back within the confines of the city. So those animals you can't shecht on Yom Tov, but the domesticated animals, even though they range during the day, as long as they sleep within the confines of the city at night, those can be shechted during the day of Yom Tov.
Maseches Rosh Hashanah is going to discuss various elements related to the Jewish calendar. The Jewish calendar is an outcome of a tzivoy, of a commandment given to the Jewish people in Mitzrayim, of HaChodesh HaZeh Lachem, that we are entrusted with the process of establishing the months of the year and thereby determining the dates of the Jewish calendar. Rashi, in the very first Rashi in the Torah, considers the possibility that the Torah could have actually begun the entire Chamisha Chumshei Torah, because now it would not be five books of Torah, but four books of Torah, from this very mitzvah of Achodesh Hazeh Lachem. So much importance is ascribed to the mitzvah of establishing the calendar, that this is the first mitzvah given to the Jewish people as a whole, and it is considered a potential starting point for the entire Torah itself. The establishment of the Jewish calendar was given over to the Jewish people in an expression on a part of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that the Jewish people are intended to be the masters over their own time. That while God created an incredible world and gave us so much potential to accomplish great things, at the end of the day, it is how we spend our time, it is how we allocate our time to our particular priorities that will ultimately determine our success in the world. And therefore, HaKadosh Baruch Hu entrusted us with the responsibility to establish the Jewish calendar. So the Jewish calendar is not set in stone, even though today we do have a preformulated calendar that could be determined for dates far into the future. The way the process worked in times of old, as we're going to discuss throughout the Masechta, was witnesses would come and testify that they saw the new moon, and with that the Beis Din would establish the Jewish calendar. And the Medrash writes that even if astronomically speaking, these witnesses were incorrect, that from an objective astronomical standpoint, the moon was visible. It just wasn't visible to the human beings that happened to show up at the Beis Din, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu ensures that the celestial realities, in fact, follow the enactments of the Jewish people. So even a day as holy as, say, Yom Kippur, on which the day before Yom Kippur there's a mitzvah to eat, and the day of Yom Kippur itself there's a prohibition to indulge in food and drink. HaKadosh Baruch Hu determines from an objective heaven perspective when the day of Yom Kippur will be, not by virtue of some sort of objective calculation, but by virtue of when the Jewish people determine that the calendar should be situated and what day Yom Kippur should fall out. And so therefore, the Jewish calendar is associated with the empowerment on the part of HaKadosh Baruch Hu to the Jewish people, and the Yerushalmi even writes that there are physical manifestations of this that actually change in the framework of creation, that follow not the objective astronomical realities of a calendarical system, but rather what the Jewish people determine should be the proper dates for the various chagim, for the various holidays. So let's begin with Maseches Rosh Hashanah, with Mishnah Aleph. We are used to colloquially calling Rosh Hashanah, when we say Rosh Hashanah, we are generally referring to the Day of Judgment, to Yom HaDin, to the day where we blow the shofar and engage in tshuva. But the Mishnah notes that there are a number of dates within the framework of the Jewish calendar that are also called Rosh Hashanah. Arba Rosh Hashanah Him, Rosh Hashanim Him, writes the Mishnah that in fact there are four days of the year that are in fact considered to be days of Rosh Hashanah. Number one, Be'echad B'Nisan. The first day of the month of Nisan is itself considered to be a day of Rosh Hashanah. With respect to what is Rosh Chodesh Nisan, a day of Rosh Hashanah? So firstly, Lamilochim, for the purposes of kings. And the Gemara explains that it is necessary to know how many years a king has been ruling. We are referring here in this part of the Mishnah to Jewish kings, and therefore, in order to determine the number of Jewish kings, the Gemara writes that Chazal decided that this should not be done based on the day that they ascend the throne, but rather there should be an objective date in the calendar that is the cutoff date for the first year. So Rosh Chodesh Nisan serves as that date. So if a Jewish king ascended the throne 4 days before Rosh Chodesh Nisan, they would in fact be considered in year two of their kingship once Rosh Chodesh Nisan arrived. And the kingship would be counted from then forward. Why is it so significant to know what the year of a particular king is? And the reason for that is because many of the shtaros, many of the legal documents, such as gittin, such as bills of divorce, and ksubos, and other legal documents, all contained dates to determine when these legal documents were effectuated. And this is important because many of these legal documents create liens on various property on the part of those engaged in this type of commerce. And so therefore, we need to know precisely when these agreements took hold. And so we cannot take a subjective date standard that is relative to a particular king. We have to have an objective standard that could move through different kings ascending the throne and be able to determine precisely when these various agreements were made. And so therefore, the din was to include the year of the king, of the Jewish king, in all of these documents. The Gemara writes that the reason why Chazal chose Rosh Chodesh Nisan is so that there would be a relationship between the ascension of a Jewish king and, of course, Zecher Letzias Mitzrayim, the Geula of the Jewish people, the exodus of the Jewish people from Egypt, so that the king would always remember that as much sovereignty that is entrusted to a Jewish king, and there is a dramatic amount of sovereignty entrusted to a Jewish king. Nevertheless, the ultimate king is the Melech Malchei Hamlochim, is HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and he is the one who ultimately directs the destiny of the Jewish people, as is manifested through the experience, through the national experience of Yetzias Mitzrayim, of the Exodus. The Meiri writes that the truth is that one of the reasons why we don't use the date of the king's ascension is because it is possible that that date could be forgotten, especially when there are a number of kings in close succession. And so therefore, it was important to pick a objective date. The Mishnah also writes that it's Rosh Hashanah, that Echad B'Nisan, the first day of Nisan, is a Rosh Hashanah L'Regalim, for the purposes of establishing holidays. So we all know that there are three primary holidays throughout the Jewish year, the Shalosh Regalim, and that is Pesach, Shavuos, and Sukkos. Chag HaMatzos, Chag HaShavuos, and Chag HaSukkos. The Torah writes that if an individual wishes to commit themselves to bringing a karbon, to bringing a sacrifice in the temple, so such an individual would make a commitment called a neder. And the Torah writes that kisidor neder la'Hashem Elokecha lo sa'acher l'shalmo. That when you make a commitment to bring a karbon, to bring a sacrifice to the Beis HaMikdash, similar to making a commitment to contribute to any institution of holiness, there is a time limit that is given when that commitment can be fulfilled. And the Torah says, lo sa'acher, you are not permitted to delay that commitment, you are not permitted to be late in fulfilling that commitment. And so therefore the Torah says, what does it mean? So the Torah says you can't be late. So what does it mean to be late? So the Gemara writes, to be late means that three chagim have passed, that three regalim have passed. However, even though the shiur, even though the amount of regalim that is given is three, the beginning of that time period begins with Rosh Chodesh Nisan, begins with Pesach. And so therefore, if you were to make the commitment a month before Pesach, so then when Pesach passes, and then Shavuos passes, and then Sukkot passes, all in a period of about 7 months, you would be required by then, by the end of Sukkot, to go ahead and fulfill your commitment. If you were to make the commitment after Pesach, so you would have not only the following year of Shavuos and Sukkos, but then you would restart the clock with Pesach again, with Rosh Chodesh Nisan, and get the following three regalim. And so that is the purpose of the Rosh Hashanah l'regalim. The Mishnah then goes on to say that be'echad be'elul, that on the first day of Elul, Rosh Hashanah l'maiser behema, that the first day of Elul serves as a Rosh Hashanah for the purposes of Maiser Behema. Maiser Behema is the Torah's requirement in Vayikra to set aside the 10th animal from among your flock of sheep and goats or herd of cattle that is born during a particular year, that every 10th animal is declared to be Kadosh as a Korban to Hashem. And the farmers would in fact allow all of the animals to pass through a particular narrow passageway and ensure that every 10th animal is designated as Kadosh LaHashem. So in order to engage in the process of Miser, since it is a percentage, you need what is essentially a fiscal year. You need a cutoff date from which you will take the 10th animal, the 10%. And so therefore, the cutoff date of Maiser Behema is the first day of Elul. The reason why the first day of Elul is chosen is because the first day of Elul is also for the Maiser of grain and the Maiser of various produce. And so therefore, we wanted to create an association between the Maiser Behema and the Maiser of grain. The Mishnah then goes on to say, Rabbi Elazar v'Rabbi Shimon Omrim be'echad b'tishrei. Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Shimon write, they disagree, and they hold that it is the first day of Tishrei serves as the Rosh Hashanah for the Maiser Behema. There is a machlokas amongst the Rishonim, which view we in fact follow, and it is somewhat unresolved. Be'echad b'tishrei Rosh Hashanah Lashonim v'lashmitin v'layovlos lanetia v'layirakos. So the first day of Tishrei, so we think of the first day of Tishrei, that's the Rosh Hashanah we're most familiar with. So first of all, it's a Rosh Hashanah for the purposes of Shanim, for the purposes of years. So the Mefarshim on the Mishnah write that here we are talking about how one calculates the years of a non-Jewish king. And here we don't select an association with an event that is specific to the Jewish people of Yetzias Mitzrayim, but a more universal event, and that is of course the creation of the world. Although there is a discussion, there's a machlokas, we're going to learn later, when exactly the world was created, and we will explore that when appropriate. So Be'echad b'Tishrei Rosh Hashanah Lashanim, but it is also the Rosh Hashanah for the purposes of Shemitah. The purposes of Shemitah. Shemitah is the mitzvah that every 7 years we allow our land to lie fallow and we rely on HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Uvashana Ashviyas Shna Shabboson Yiyeh La'aretz. And this lasts for an entire year, and that year is calculated from Rosh Chodesh Tishrei. The Mishnah then goes on to say that it is also a Rosh Hashanah for Yovlos. Yovlos is the mitzvah of Yovel, which the Pasuk in Vayikra describes that after seven cycles of Shemitah, the 50th year is known as Yovel. During that year, first of all, there is an accentuated need to rely on the Chesed of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, because we are in fact going to leave the land lying fallow for an additional year of Shemitah. But in addition to that, during that year, all of the Jewish slaves are set free, and the land that has been sold through various means returns to their original owners. And that happens during Yovel. Yovel, so the Mishnah says that Yovel begins on Echad B'Tishrei. We know that one of the reasons why we blow the shofar at the conclusion of Yom Kippur is because the shofar used to be blown at the conclusion of Yom Kippur on the year of Yovel, and that signaled the ultimate freedom for all of the slaves who were living in the various homes. So the Gemara describes that the Rambam describes that there were these 10 days where even though the slaves were free people, they still remained in the homes of their masters. And that ability to continue to live with one's master, even in the framework of freedom, speaks to the Jewish approach to slavery in general, which was not an approach of domination and control, but was an approach of restoration, an approach of a contractual relationship, whereby, you know, the slave was provided with incredible support and a wonderful loving home and in a great environment. And to sort of celebrate that relationship, those final 10 days were shared in that context. The Mishnah tells us Lanetia. It's also Rosh Chodesh Tishrei is also Rosh Chodesh for the purpose of planting. The Gemara writes that this is referring to the planting of trees. There is a mitzvah in the Torah called Orla, which means the first 3 years of any tree, we are not allowed to benefit from it. And then the fourth year of the tree is called Revai, and that is where the produce has to be brought to Yerushalayim and eaten there. And subsequent to that, the tree becomes appropriate for one to benefit from. So the din is, the law is, that if one planted a tree, it has to be about 45 days or more before the first of Tishrei. 45 days because it takes about 14 days for the seeds to take root. And then 30 days are considered to be the length of a year based on a principle of Rabbi Elazar, that Shloshim Yom Bashana Chashav Kishana. And if that occurs, then Rosh Hashanah, the first of Tishrei, will serve as the conclusion of year one. And then you calculate from there forward. As we're going to see later in the Mishnah, even though Rosh Hashanah is the calculation for year one, there is still a requirement to wait at the conclusion of Rosh Hashanah till Tu B'Shvat, or till Rosh Chodesh Shvat, as we're going to see, in order to be able to benefit from the fruit. Also, V'lei Yerakos, for vegetables, and this refers to the general din of Trumos and Maisos, that every single year, except for the year of Shemitah, we have to give a portion of our produce to the Kohen, and that is called Truma, and from what is left, we have to give another tenth to the Levi, and that is called Maiser Rishon. From the remainder of what was originally left, we have to give, depending on the years of the Shemitah cycle, in the first, second, fourth, and fifth years, we take what is called Maiser Sheni. The previous Maiser was Maiser Rishon, this is Maiser Sheni. In the third and sixth year of the cycle, we take what is called Maiser Ani. Maiser Sheni is separated in those years, and Maiser Ani is given to poor people. In the seventh year, all of the land is considered Hefker. So we need a cutoff date to determine when these years are calculated. So the Mishnah writes, V'la Yerakos, that Rosh Chodesh Tishrei becomes that cutoff date as well. And so therefore, vegetables that are picked from the ground before Tishrei cannot be combined with vegetables that are picked after Tishrei in order to determine the total from which we have to select the Maiser. The Mishnah then tells us, Be'echad B'Shvat, on the first day of Shvat, Rosh Hashanah Le'ilon, that the first day of Shvat serves as the Rosh Hashanah for trees when it comes to the purpose of taking Meiser from those produce as well. Kedivrei Beis Shammai, Beis Hillel Omrim, B'chamisha Asar Bo, that the 15th day of Shvat, as we celebrate Tu B'Shvat, that is the time that is normal for the blossoming of the tree, and so therefore that is when we will take from the, that is when the tree achieves that important point of crossing the threshold of the year.